So we all were born in darkness of, deep darkness of ignorance. And our spiritual master very mercifully opened our darkened eyes, blinded eyes, by anointing with transcendental knowledge. So that's why we are very, very grateful to Srila Prabhupada that somehow by His mercy we are getting some idea, a little glimpse of the spiritual world. Otherwise we had no idea whatsoever about the spiritual reality. We heard about the soul but never really tried to understand what it is. Its nature, its purpose, and its functioning. But as soon as we came across Srila Prabhupada's teachings, immediately we got the understanding. Prabhupada transmitted Krishna's teachings so wonderfully. Although in India, so many people read Bhagavad Gita, but they don't have any clear understanding. But with Srila Prabhupada's teachings, immediately everything becomes crystal clear. That's why His Bhagavad Gita is Bhagavad Gita as it is. Meaning, not only the way Krishna spoke, but the way Arjuna understood it. That is the meaning of as it is. But what is happening nowadays? They are using Bhagavad Gita as Krishna spoke, but they are giving their understanding. And that's the problem. I don't need the phone coming to me. Just shift it a little more to that side. Yeah, you all need it. In a very clear understanding, na jayate mriyate bhagavadaji. The soul is na jayate, is never born. So, well, okay, yeah, I forgot to ask. The sound is all right? That corner? What's your problem, Shrikanta? You all right now? Now is it a little louder? Okay. Or do you want it to be more loud? Okay. Yeah, the nature of the soul, na jayate mriyate bhagavadaji. The soul is never born, soul never dies. Who is born? The body is born. When did the body take birth? When the soul accepts a new body. And what is death? When the soul leaves the old body. So who dies? Who is born and who dies? Body. So Srila Prabhupada made things so clear. And Srila Prabhupada made it clear, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whereas those people read Bhagavad Gita and their conclusion is, I am God, you are God, everyone is God, only Krishna is not God. That is their teaching. And that's why the whole country is in such a state. India has the greatest wealth. Today's world is very much into exporting their wealth. They are distributing, like America is exporting its weapons to all the countries to fight with each other. China is supplying all the commodities. Japan is supplying the cars. Germany is supplying the technology. And India is supplying IT personnels. All materialistic development is taking place. Materialistic exchanges. But India's real wealth is spiritual wisdom. And Srila Prabhupada is the first personality who actually took it to the West. And all these endeavors, economic endeavors, are going sometimes high, sometimes low. But this wealth is continuously expanding. Continuously expanding in the sense when in the early stage we had only few thousand devotees. Now we have millions of devotees all over the world. And Srila Prabhupada started this business single-handedly without any investment. But this business has become the most successful business, and it's growing, and it will continue to grow. So we all have the responsibility to do that. There is a saying, you know, who is a miser? Who gets the wealth and keeps it only for himself, and he doesn't even use it for himself. That's a miser. A miser in Sanskrit is called Kripana. We have so many music coming. Thank you very much. Background music. So, sometimes I make an announcement. If anybody wants to sponsor the Sunday feast, keep your mobile phone active. Now I know here you all are more generous. Now you are not concerned only with the Sunday feast. You can sponsor the entire retreat. So let us see who is so generous. And such generous person may be quite shy and may not inform us. So those who are next to him or her, please remind us that such and such devotee wants to sponsor the retreat feast. So, yeah, India's real wealth is this wisdom. And some people are trying to present it, but they are just giving the hodgepodge. But we can see how they're gaining popularity. Today, yoga has become such a popular thing all over the world. And it's only one insignificant part of the Vedic wisdom. Anyway, so as I was going back, Kripana means miser. And who is a miser? Who has the wealth but doesn't give it to others or doesn't even use it for himself. You know what a real miser does? He doesn't even spend money for himself or his family. He loves to count money. That is his transcendental ecstasy. And the opposite to miser Kripana, what is opposite to Kripana? Mahajana. And who is the real Mahajana? A devotee. Why? Because he distributes the knowledge. That's why every morning we are singing this song. Bhuvi grinanti jibhuridajana. One who distributes this Krishna consciousness, Krishna katha, kathamritam, nectarian words of Krishna, they are the most magnanimous personalities. Most munificent personalities. So, please don't become Kripanas. Become Mahajanas. Not only not give it to others, but after getting it to yourself, you are not used. One doesn't use it for himself. Such a wealth we got from Srila Prabhupada. Chant 16 rounds every day. But what happens? I notice one phenomenon which is very common in ISKCON nowadays. In order to get initiation, everyone chants 16 rounds. So fixed up in chanting 16 rounds, chanting of following the four regulative principles. And then, after getting initiation, chanting goes diminishing. And then finally, stop chanting. Following the four regulative principles, oh, that was in the past, I think I took a vow. Please become serious. It's not for anything else, but for your own spiritual benefit. Sometimes devotees ask, did Prabhupada say that if you chant 16 rounds and follow four regulative principles, then I'll be responsible to take you back to Godhead? Yes, Prabhupada will. But please follow these principles. At the time of initiation, I don't see the excuse. But then I start to hear excuse. Oh, Guru Maharaj, I am so busy. Don't have time to chant 16 rounds. How many rounds you chant? Sometimes I fail to chant 16 rounds. What does it mean? Oftentimes I don't chant any round at all. Just ask yourself what's happening to your spiritual life. Because just as you know what is happening to you, what is happening with you, you can rest assured that Krishna knows it even better than you. And you are dealing with Krishna, you are not dealing with anyone else. When you took the vow at the time of initiation, you knew that Krishna was there, witnessing it. The Vaishnavas were there. So please don't take your spiritual life so lightly. And the purpose of these seminars is just to bring you back to your steady situation. Become fixed up in your spiritual life. These allurements for material enjoyment is actually Maya's tricks. These allurements are actually Maya's test. Do you want to enjoy here, or you want to go to Krishna, go to spiritual world? That test is Maya constantly putting us into. You want Krishna, or me. That is Maya's condition. Me means Krishna's external image. Do you want to remain in Krishna's internal potency or you want to remain in Krishna's external potency? Now if you remain in external potency, then you'll suffer. But if you really want to enjoy, yes, you want to enjoy. Because you are joyful by nature. So you want to enjoy. The real enjoyment is in the spiritual world. You can't even imagine how wonderful this enjoyment is. So, as I was telling, that the purpose of these seminars is simply to remind you about this ultimate objective of your spiritual life. Why did you come here? Why did you accept this process? And you can see by hearing about Krishna's pastimes, how wonderfully one experiences an inconceivable joy and how one is rewarded by Krishna. Through this we get to see somebody just does a little bit for Krishna and how wonderfully Krishna rewards him. So, and associate with each other in a nice way. If you have difficulty dealing with other devotees, don't put the blame on those other devotees. Rather consider what's wrong with me. That is the right way to, right approach. I won't be able to change the whole world, but I can change myself. Isn't it? Who is a better person to change yourself than you yourself? Everybody has a tendency to criticize. Everyone is a wonderful critic. But criticize yourself, not criticize others. Make it a point to, since you are so expert in criticizing, criticize yourself. What's wrong with me? And pray to Krishna. Krishna, these are my defects. Please, I do not know how to rectify them, but please, you help me. Krishna will help. Lord Nrisimhadev will help. Krishna listens to sincere prayer. So that is, we have to understand while we are practicing the process of Krishna consciousness, that we have come here with a very special mission. And that mission is to achieve the lotus feet of Krishna, develop a loving relationship with Krishna, and learn how to die properly. Die properly means, at the time of death, shouldn't think of anything about this world. Our mind should be completely focused on Krishna and the spiritual reality. Because if we think about anything in this material nature, we have to come back. And that's what we have to practice, that at the time of death we can leave ourselves, we can free ourselves from all material attachments. That also reminds me, like I have personally seen, apparently somebody seemed to be very, very attached, and I used to feel quite concerned. Oh, he's so attached to his family and everything. But we noticed that at the time of death, became completely detached. So that's Krishna's mercy. How Krishna does it, we can't imagine, we can't understand. One way to look at it is, if at that time Krishna appears, will you be able to think of anything else? When the all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead is standing in front of us, then Krishna may bless us with good fortune like that. So, remain fixed up in this process. Always remember that Prabhupada gave the perfect process. Prabhupada gave the perfect process. So just follow that. And don't try to change anything. One simple formula I try to follow is just follow what Prabhupada did, Prabhupada gave. Just follow. Don't introduce anything new. Especially, don't introduce anything new that is contrary to Srila Prabhupada's teachings. Nowadays, we see one tendency. Some individuals start to even criticize Srila Prabhupada's teachings, find faults in Prabhupada's teachings. It's so unfortunate. What is the hope we have if we don't have the mercy of Srila Prabhupada? We have to recognize that it's due to Srila Prabhupada that we got everything. We are here today simply because of Srila Prabhupada. And shouldn't we have at least this much gratitude that it is because of him we got Krishna consciousness? And when you go deeper and deeper, then you can see that Prabhupada is actually a very divine arrangement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent Srila Prabhupada to fulfill his prediction that Krishna consciousness movement would spread all over the world in every town and village. Do you all believe that? Krishna consciousness movement would spread in every town and village?
Yes.
I hear some people even express their doubts. That, well, maybe people will hear the holy name in every town and village. No, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said Krishna consciousness movement would spread in every town and village. And it has been even more clarified by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You know what Bhaktivinoda Thakur said? That all the religions of the world will come under the umbrella of Krishna consciousness. What does it mean? There will be only one religion. And is it difficult? Like today you look at the room, we find people from different religions have come and got together. So doesn't it show that ultimate culmination of all religion is to be come under the umbrella of Krishna consciousness? There are so many of us coming from Hindu background, Muslim background, Christian background, Jewish background. Are you all perfectly situated?
Yes.
So isn't our religious conviction got its perfection in Krishna consciousness? So if it can happen in a small way, in a smaller domain, then why cannot it be extended to the entire world and engulf all the religions? Because all the religions are speaking about the same thing. There may be a degree of revelation, degree of understanding, but it is all religions are speaking about the same thing. And the most important thing is, we can look at it this way. Is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu the Supreme Personality of Godhead?
Yes.
How many of you believe that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? So when the Supreme Personality of Godhead says something, can it go in vain?
No.
How many of you think that the words of the Lord can never go in vain? Okay. How many of you believe that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that this Krishna consciousness movement would spread all over the world in every town and village? So when he says every town and village, did he mean every town and village or some town and village? Every town and village. So, our future has been clearly established. What will happen? Does anybody have any doubt? What will happen? No. Every town and village. What will happen to the world? We don't know at that time. How it will happen, we do not know. When it will happen, we do not know. Just when the Lord said, let there be light, was there light? How did He make it happen? If it was left to us to believe, then we would think of, oh, such a big generator producing electricity. No. Let there be light, and there was light. That is how He functions. If He can lift a mountain with His little finger and hold it for 7 days, what He cannot do? Now, what to speak of lifting a mountain and holding it for 7 days? He is keeping innumerable universes floating in the space without even touching them. That's His potency. Do you believe that? What happened?
Yes.
So that is what we actually have to understand. By hearing Krishna's pastimes, this is what we have to understand. That He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and He can do anything. And His pastimes are enacted in such a way so that we, with our tiny little brain, can understand. So that we can understand He is performing. We can't even imagine how He is making the universes float in the space. But when you hear that, a 7-year-old boy holding a mountain, at least we can consider how impossible it is. But He did it. So that's His quality. He can make impossible possible. And if He can make impossible possible, what is impossible for Him? So that is how we have to approach Krishna and His activities which we are discussing. Okay, now let's go back. What is this Garga Samhita? Garga Samhita ultimately is King Bahulasya's questions to Narad Muni, and Narad Muni is answered. King Bahulasya is a great devotee. Do you all remember from Srimad Bhagavatam? Krishna went to this place called Videha. And in Videha, there was two devotees. One was the king of that country and the other was a very poor brahmana. So what did Krishna do? There are two devotees. So Krishna expanded Himself into two forms and He went to two persons. Now why did Krishna do that? Because Krishna reciprocates the loving exchange with His devotees. His devotee loves Him, Krishna loves Him in response. And Krishna does all kinds of amazing things for the sake of His devotees. So this King Bahulasya was asking Narad Muni questions. And Narad Muni is answering those questions. So I will now leave the Vrindavan Lila behind and go to Mathura. I didn't discuss Vrindavan Lila in detail because Vrindavan Lila has so many wonderful aspects That, if we have time, we'll go into that. Especially Krishna's loving exchange with the gopis. I briefly mentioned there are different types of individuals who actually got the opportunity to become gopis in Vrindavan. Do you remember yesterday I mentioned how many of you remember? One gopi, one type of gopi, Madhavendra? Vedas, okay, Shruti Chari. Grass of Vrindavan. Okay, wonderful. Okay, they also become good. They are creepers of Vrindavan. Huh? Okay, very good. The ladies of Ayodhya. Huh? Savari women, yeah. Dandakarana sages. Very good. Yes? Yeah, very good. Swarna Sitas, Jagga Sitas. They're just to name a few. So Krishna gave them the opportunity to fulfill their desires. Most of the activities, most of the things happened during the during Lord Ramchandra's pastimes. Now Lord Ramchandra wanted to have only one wife. So when they approached, he said, "Sorry, I can't fulfill your desire. But if you're patient enough, I'll fulfill your desire in the next Dwapar Yuga." And they all were intelligent individuals. They said, "We'll wait." Some of them even performed great austerities in order to get this inconceivable opportunity. So this is how the Supreme Personality of Godhead reciprocated with His devotees. And so, anyway, so I'll see, maybe later on we'll discuss about that. But now I am just going into some Krishna's Mathura Leela. Bahulasha asked Narad Muni, "How did Krishna kill Kamsa?" So Narad Muni told him that inspired by Krishna from within his heart, Narad Muni went to Mathura. A pure devotee always acts by being inspired by the Lord. Therefore, pure devotee's activities can never be criticized. So it seems that here Narad Muni went to Mathura, went to Kamsa. Kamsa was very respectful. As I told you, like the demons of those early days were very respectful toward Brahmanas. They knew by being respectful and serving the Brahmanas, one can get good fortune. IT. So Kamsa, although a demon, he was respectful, very respectful towards Narad Muni and other Brahmanas also, that we find. So he treated Narad Muni with great respect, offered him the singhasan to sit on. And Narad Muni told Kamsa, "Kamsa, why are you so distressed? There are rings around your eyes, your face is emaciated. Seems to be in your great anxiety. What's the matter?" So Kamsa admitted to Narad Muni, "Look, I have been told that I will be killed by Devaki's eighth son. And I made so many endeavors to stop Devaki's children to survive. I took all kinds of precaution, but still it seems that my endeavor is not going to be successful. So at that time Narada Muni told, you know, Kamsa, that Krishna is actually Devaki's son, who is in the house of Nanda Maharaj, and Balaram is also the son of Devaki and Vasudeva and Rohini. Devaki also. So seventh son is Balaram and the eighth son is Krishna. And Narada Muni told the whole episode, how when Krishna was born, actually Narayan took birth. Your arch enemy, Hari, has appeared as the eighth son of Devaki in Vasudeva. And being instructed by some divine arrangement, Vasudev carried that child to Nanda's house. The daughter that he brought is not actually Devaki's daughter. That was Jasoda's daughter. So this way Narada Muni and told Kamsa everything. Kamsa became so angry that he pulled out the sword and he was about to kill Vasudeva. But Narada stopped him. He said, look, by killing Vasudeva, what will you gain? Your enemy is not Vasudeva. The one who is meant to kill you is not Vasudeva, it's Krishna. Rather, if you kill Vasudeva, Krishna will become even more angry. So that's not the good move. Don't kill him. After all, what's the benefit of killing him? So, Kamsa put again Vasudeva and Devaki in prison. So apparently, it may seem, why Narada Muni did that? There are various reasons why he did that. Narada Muni told Bahulasya that he was inspired by Krishna from within. It's not that he was acting on his own. He was acting on behalf of Krishna. Krishna wanted that. Why? Krishna wanted to make the arrangement now to go to Mathura and kill Kamsa. And there is a whole lot of things behind that background also. Then Narada Muni pointed out Kamsa's mistake. He said, look, when your enemy is too strong, then don't send your allies one after another. And you saw, like you sent, starting from Putana to Aristashura, you sent so many of the demons, Nabomasura, but they all got killed. The proper strategy, you are a Kshatriya, you know the warfare, the strategy for warfare. What is the warfare strategy for war? If the enemy is too strong, then gather all your strength and attack your enemy. So how can I do that? You invite all your friends. There are so many big, big demons. They're so powerful. Invite them all. How can I invite them like that? I can't say that I'm afraid of Krishna, therefore I'm inviting them to take care of Krishna. No, you don't have to tell them that. You tell them that in your possession, you have the bow of Lord Shiva. And if anybody can string that bow, then you'll give him half of your kingdom. So invitation was sent and Kamsa arranged a Dhanurjagya festival. Yagya to celebrate this bow, and the condition was that if anybody could string that bow, he would give him half the kingdom. So all the kings came, and Kamsa went to Akrura and told him to go and invite Krishna, Balaram and all the gopas. And the invitation was that we heard that Krishna and Balaram are very good wrestlers. So the king wants to watch their wrestling match. In the forest, they wrestle. So give some performance in that festival. So Akrura knew, Kamsa told him that in this way he would bring Krishna and Balaram and kill them. But Akrura thought that although Kamsa has this very cruel plan, but he will still go, because this will give him an opportunity to see Krishna and Balaram. So he wanted to take this opportunity. Kamsa gave his own chariot to bring Krishna and Balaram. Akrura took the chariot and he went there. Akrura went there, and Akrura was a great devotee, and he knew that eventually Krishna will kill Kamsa, because that has been destined. The Supreme Lord has come to kill Kamsa. So he'll make it happen. So Akrura went. When he entered into Vrindavan, he saw Krishna's footprints. He was so overwhelmed just by seeing Krishna's footprints, he just started to roll in the ground and offering prayers to Krishna and Balaram. Then he came to Nanda Maharaj's house and spent the night there talking about the situation of Mathura, what's happening. He told that Vasudeva and Devaki have been arrested again and put into prison. All the Jadus have fled. Most of the Jadus have fled. And so he told them, King Nanda Maharaj was very disappointed to hear about the situation. And he told that Krishna and Balaram and all the gopas have been invited to come. So Nanda Maharaj informed everyone that the king has invited us, so carry all kinds of gift for the king, and tomorrow morning we will leave. And so the news already spread, and all the gopis were very, very upset that this Akrura, that uncruel individual, who is the cruel personified, cruelty personified, has come here to take Krishna. They said, nothing doing, we are not going to let Krishna go. So Krishna expanded himself into all the gopis and he went to their houses. And to console them, Krishna went to Radharani and told her that he will go to kill Kamsa. He has actually come to kill the demons. Now the demons, those who are coming to Vrindavan, he is killing them. And now he has to go out to kill them. Previously good demons were coming to be killed by him. Now he'll have to go to fulfill the greater mission. And first one is Kamsa and his allies. So Radharani said, look, if you leave, then I won't be able to survive. I'll die. I'll give up my body. Krishna consoled her, and then finally Krishna said, look, my devotee's words can never go in vain. Do you remember that Sridhama cursed you, that for 100 years he'll be separated from me? So it's going to happen. So Radharani was crying. And then she made a condition that she can, Krishna actually told that every month he would come once to meet her. And in the morning the arrangement was made, Krishna and Balaram got into the chariot. And but the gopis blocked the way. Not only blocked the way, Garuda Samhita is giving a vivid description. With stick in hands, they started to beat the horses, they started to beat the chariot driver, and being beaten, being hit by the hit like that, whipped like that, the horses just went wild, and they started to run here and there. And then they actually got hold of Akrura, dragged him out of the chariot, and started to beat him up with their bracelets. So Krishna and Balaram actually stopped them from and protected Akrura. Then finally, Krishna's assurance to the gopis kind of pacified them to some extent, and they left. And the gopis were standing there looking at Krishna disappearing. Krishna's chariot went out of the sight. They kept on looking. As long as the dust from the chariot's wheel could be seen. And then Akrura came to Jamuna. When he came in, he came to Jamuna, he stopped the chariot. Krishna and Balaram got out of the chariot and took some water from Jamuna, drank it. And Akrura asked them for their permission to go and take a bath in Jamuna. So Krishna said, okay, and they went back to the chariot. When Akrura went to take a bath in Jamuna, they saw Krishna and Balaram in Jamuna. They were surprised. Krishna and Balaram went back to the chariot. So he went back to the chariot and saw Krishna and Balaram sitting there. So he came back to Jamuna, and there he saw Krishna and Balaram in their forearm form. Vaikuntha form. So Akrura offered obeisances to Krishna and Balaram. And then he brought them to Mathura. And in Mathura, when he came, he requested Krishna to come to his house. Krishna said, no, I won't go to your house now. When my mission is accomplished, then only I'll go to your house. So, then Akrura went to Kamsa and reported to him that he brought Krishna and Balaram. And in the meantime, Nanda Maharaj and other cowherd people also arrived in Mathura. But they didn't go to the city because they are cowherd people. They camped outside the city in the forest, at the edge of the forest and the city. So Krishna and Balaram met them, and then Krishna and Balaram also met the other cowherd boys, and they wanted to go and see the city of Mathura. So Nanda Maharaj said, be very careful. This is not Gokul, where you can roam around freely without any anxiety. this is Mathura, Kamsa's kingdom. And who knows what he might do. Krishna and Balaram said, yes, Baba, we will take care. We'll be careful. Nanda Maharaj told Balaram, Balaram, protect Krishna. See that he doesn't run into any difficulty. Balaram assured, so laughing, all these boys went to see Mathura city. The description of Mathura city will blow the biggest architect's mind. It was so magnificent. The palaces, like the houses were not just houses, they were palaces. The residents of Mathura were living in palaces. The roads were so wide. And on the sides of the roads there are beautiful gardens. Now, you know, this is the thing that people fail to recognize, that this description is at least 5,000 years old. And 5,000 years ago, the cities were like that. You can imagine something provided there is something there. You can't imagine from nothing. Even if it's imagination, I mean, you can consider, you know, how can anybody even imagine such things unless there was such a very, very advanced civilization. And those roads, wide roads, and there were gates from area to area. Those gates were made of most precious stones. I mean, marbles and onyx, and studded with precious stones. And those roads used to be washed every morning and evening with scented water. And how the roads used to be washed? Hundreds of elephants would carry the water in their trunk and they would just sprinkle the water. So that is how the roads were washed. Not by pumping the water from one source to another. All natural. Right? People want to go back to nature and we can see how natural was the culture at that time. Elephants were cleaning the road, were washing the roads. An elephant can carry a lot of water. And this water was just not ordinary water. They were perfumed. Not with French perfumes, artificial perfumes. They are perfumed with agaru, sandalwood, oil, and all kinds of natural fragrances. Even those artificial fragrances, they use all these natural ingredients, like sandalwood. I was told that in France, they buy a kilo of sandalwood oil for something like $38,000. 38,000 euros. One kilo of sandalwood oil. In India also, they are sold very expensive. They are very expensive. The pure, I mean, I'm talking about pure sandalwood oil. So, I heard about it because somebody was smuggling sandalwood oil from India and selling it in Paris. Don't get ideas though. So, then Krishna and Balaram were along with the cowherd boys, there were three to see Mathura city. They were from the forest of Vrindavan. They came to the city and they were very excited. And there were chariots going through the streets, horses with people riding on the horses, people riding on elephants, and everybody seems to be so beautifully dressed. And all the women, they heard about Krishna and Balaram. And they came onto their windows and came onto the rooftop. And seeing Krishna and Balaram, they felt that this is the most beautiful personality that they had ever seen. And they immediately wanted to embrace him. And some of them fainted just seeing the beauty of Krishna. Then Krishna saw a washerman carrying the bundle of fancy clothes. So he asked the washerman, "So what are you carrying?" "I'm carrying the clothes for Kamsa." "Well, you see, we are invited guests of Kamsa. Will you please give us some dresses? Because to go to the royal court, we have to be properly dressed." And that washerman became very upset. "You village boys who are dressed only in kaupins, you dare to get the dress of the king? Did your father and grandfather even seen dresses like this?" "And go back to the forest. If you don't, then just because you desired this offensive desire, we are going to put you into prison." And in this way, this washerman was raving and ranting. So, it reached Krishna's limit of tolerance. And his head went flying. Just one slap. It's also said that Krishna's hand acted like a sword and severed his head. Just bare hand severed his head from his body. And seeing that, all the other washermen, his companions, they all ran. So Krishna and Balaram opened the bundle of clothes. They selected some, they wore them. All the cowherd boys also dressed up in that way. Yeah. And they were just happily moving. But the way they dressed was not very fitting, because they're not used to that kind of thing. They just put on the dress. So there was a weaver who came and volunteered to dress them up, to put the dress properly. So Krishna and Balaram was very pleased with him. And Krishna said that because you have done this for us, you will get the same form as mine in the spiritual world. And Balaram said, "You will get the same strength as mine and my handsomeness." So this is how, just because this weaver rendered a little service to Krishna, how wonderfully Krishna rewarded him. Then Krishna came across one flower person. And his name was Sudama. So seeing Krishna and Balaram, Sudama just invited him invited them, please come to my place. And this, he selected the choicest flower garlands and flower ornaments and offered them to dress them, decorated Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys. All the cowherd boys also got dressed up in that fancy clothes. And so he decorated them. And then a group of Vaishyas came to Krishna and Balaram and said, when you become the king, please recognize us as your obedient servants. So Krishna asked them, can you tell me where is that bow kept? So these Vaishyas, they suspected something, that this Krishna may go and break the bow, and if Kamsa finds out that and they give the direction, then Kamsa may get upset with him. So they didn't want to tell. But there were some little boys there. He said, come, come, we know where it is. We'll take you there. So those boys actually took Krishna and Balaram. That area was guarded and no one was allowed to go in. The next day was the Dhanurjagya. So arrangements were being made. So they tried to stop Krishna and Balaram. Krishna and Balaram waved them aside and walked into the bow. And this bow was so heavy, it is said that it needed 5,000 people to carry it. So Krishna picked it up with the left hand. He bent it, strung the bow. And then he pulled it, the bow broke. And the sound of breaking the bow was so loud that the entire earth planet started to shake. Kamsa heard the thing and he inquired, what happened? What happened? Some village boys came and broke the bow. Kamsa says, kill them, drive them out of this place. And he sent his soldiers to fight with them, to take care of that. Now you remember where the bow came from? Who gave Kamsa this bow? How many of you remember that? Let me see, raise your hands. How many of you remember that? Okay, Nainesh. Who gave it to Kamsa? Parashura. Remember? Kamsa went to Mahendra mountain. He lifted the mountain and placed it 100 times. Parashuram was meditating there. His meditation broke. And he went and, you arrogant Kshatriya, I'm going to kill you. Anyway, you displayed some power. Let's see how powerful you are. If you can string the bow, I'll fight with you. If you can't string the bow, then I'll kill you. You rascal Kshatriya. So Kamsa took the bow, he strung it. Parashuram was very impressed. And then Kamsa said, sir, I'm not a Kshatriya. I'm a demon. And so this is how he won the favor of Parashuram. Parashuram said, okay, I'll give you this bow. This bow was, this is actually Vishnu's bow. He gave it to Lord Shiva to kill Tripurasura. And then this bow gradually came to me. So now I'm giving it to you. And If somebody, when someone breaks this bow, then that will indicate that you are going to die. When the bow has been broken, then you will die. So Kamsa got the message. One after another he was getting messages. And the guards tried to attack Krishna and Balaram. They didn't have any weapon. So they took those two broken part of the bow, and with those two broken part of the bow, they wiped out the whole army. How is it possible? Why it's not possible? Can you wipe out an army of ants? What will take you? So for Krishna and Balaram, wiping out Kamsa's army was something like that. So this is again how we have to look at Krishna's pastimes. Generally, one may say, how is it possible? How can one person fight against millions of soldiers? What is impossible for the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Same thing happened when Kar and Dushana, two brothers of Ravana, attacked Ramchandra. Ramchandra didn't even let Lakshman fight. He said, Lakshman, you guard Sita, you protect Sita. And alone he fought and wiped out the entire army. Only he let one person to leave and report to Ravana what actually happened. So anyway, this is how wonderful Lord's pastimes are. And this is how, by just hearing these pastimes, our faith in Him becomes established. And we also get an opportunity not to believe in Him. We get an opportunity to think Krishna is not God. Demons also get an opportunity. Oh, these are fairy tales. How can I think? So this is the difference between a devotee and a demon. A devotee accepts everything that Krishna does, no matter how wonderful it is. Whereas a demon is always finding an opportunity to establish that Krishna is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is just an ordinary person. So, this is how Krishna and Balaram appeared in Mathura. And then all the citizens were struck with wonder. These two little boys just wiped out the whole regiment of Kamsa. Also, another thing like that happened when Hanuman went to Sri Lanka. When Hanuman went to Lanka, Ravan sent one army, a full regiment, headed by his own son. And Hanuman picked up an iron rod, and with that he wiped out the whole army, including Ravana's son. So this is how wonderful the Supreme Personality of Godhead is, and this is how wonderfully Lord's devotees become empowered. Not only that the Lord Himself does these wonderful things, He makes His devotees also perform all kinds of wonderful things. Now, are they fairy tales? It's up to you to decide. But if you ask me, I will say they are not only the truth, but they are the absolute truth. So, then they went back to where the other cowherd people were staying that night. That night everyone slept peacefully. Only two persons couldn't sleep. One is Nanda Maharaj. Nanda Maharaj was in anxiety that we are in Kamsa's territory. Who knows what meant Kamsa do at the middle of the night. So they created a kind of barricade with all the bullock carts that they brought. They, in a half moon circle, the band, just. And the other person who couldn't sleep the whole night was Kamsa. Kamsa was, throughout the night, he was having all kinds of nightmare. He saw the creatures without a head moving around. And at one point he saw that he himself doesn't have a head. And then at one point he saw that his body is not casting any shadow. And in this way he started to have nightmare. Stayed up the whole night, seeing all kinds of frightening experiences. In the morning, they got dressed up, Krishna and Balaram. And along with the cowherd boys, they just went to the Kamsa's palace. Kamsa already made the arrangement. That first arrangement to kill Krishna and Balaram was a terrible elephant called Kubalayapira. You remember Kubalayapira? How Kamsa got Kubalayapira? Kubalayapira actually belonged to Jarasandha. And one day, this elephant went loose. At that time, Jarasandha, with the intention to conquer the whole world, he camped on the bank of Jamuna. And this elephant was there. Subhash, sit on a chair. You can come forward. So, and it started to, that elephant went all over destroying everything. At that time Kamsa was wrestling with some wrestlers. And all the wrestlers, seeing the elephant, mad elephant, ran away. But Kamsa confronted that elephant. And a terrible fight ensued. And finally Kamsa picked up that elephant and started to swing it overhead and let it go. And that elephant went flying for 80 miles and landed in Jarasandha's camp. Jarasandha wondered, what's the matter? How this elephant came flying? So then he found out what Kamsa had done. So he was so impressed that with Kamsa's strength, that he not only made allies with Kamsa. Kamsa was a young boy at that time. And he offered his two daughters, Asti and Prapti, in marriage to Kamsa. And he gave this elephant as a dowry to Kamsa. So that's how Kamsa inherited this elephant, Kubalayapira. And it had the strength of 10,000 wild elephants. Such a powerful elephant. So Kamsa's plan was that when Krishna and Balaram would come, that elephant would kill them. And he trained his elephant driver with that. That when these two boys come, kill them. So when Krishna and Balaram came to the gate, city gate or palace gate, he saw the elephant. So he told the elephant driver, please move out, make room for me to go. The elephant driver said, who are you? Krishna and Balaram. We came from the forest of Vrindavan. The fancy dress that you are seeing, we are wearing, it actually belongs to your master, Kamsa. And we have been invited by your master. So, You shouldn't block our way, you should let us in. And at that point, the elephant driver charged. They actually have a thing called ankush. It's a goad. One side is like a spear, and the other is like a hook. So this is how they control the elephant. And as soon as it did that, the elephant charged. And the elephant wrapped Krishna with its trunk. But Krishna slipped out of that. And then Krishna played with the elephant. It has been described just as Krishna used to play hide and seek in the forest of Vrindavan, Krishna was playing hide and seek with the elephant. Krishna went behind the elephant. When the elephant went this way looking for him, Krishna went that way. And in this way, then at one time Krishna went under the belly of the elephant. And the elephant started to turn around in cycles, in circles, and couldn't find Krishna. But the elephant also can detect the object by smell. So when it figured out that Krishna is under his belly, so he stepped out and tried to get Krishna. And then at one point Krishna tripped the elephant, that the elephant fell. And when the elephant fell, Krishna also was lying on the ground. Then the elephant got up and tried to get Krishna, stampede Krishna. So the elephant was trying to put his foot and Krishna kept on moving. So in this way, Krishna, for a long time, Krishna played with the elephant. And then finally, Krishna held the elephant by its trunk and started to pull. And at one point, Krishna was holding the trunk and pulling the elephant, and Balaram was holding the tail and pulling. And this way being pulled from both sides, the elephant was in a great distress. And then finally, Krishna just grabbed the elephant by his trunk and smashed it on the ground. And then with his fist, he kept on punching the elephant. Now, first he punched it in his hands, but then he, when it fell, it pulled the tusk of the elephant, a huge tusk, pulled it out of his body. And with the tusk, it started to beat the elephant. And this is how this elephant Kuvalayapida was killed. So, and carrying those two tusks as two trophies, Krishna and Balaram entered into the arena. And it has been described in Srimad Bhagavatam how different people saw Krishna in different ways. Mallanam Ashani. The wrestlers who were actually about to wrestle with Krishna and Balaram, they saw him as thunderbolt Ashani. The king saw him as the best of the king, as the best of the human being. Now, and the ordinary people saw him as the best of human beings. The king saw him as the punisher, the supreme punisher. The ladies saw him as the personified Cupid. The Jodhus saw him as an intimate relative. The cowherd boys saw him as their friend. So in this way, different people, different individuals saw Krishna in different ways. And So this is how Krishna and Balaram just entered there. It's a beautiful description. Their faces were already decorated with sandalwood. And now the blood from that elephant's body kind of came in kind of drops on their face. And it looked like they are decorated with white chandan and red chandan. Sandalwood, there is a red sandalwood also. And they just entered there. So, then Chanur and Mushtika, these two wrestlers, like giants, they challenged. Come. For the pleasure of the king, display your ability to wrestle. The king heard about your wrestling skill. So he wants now, by exhibiting your wrestling skill with us, you please the king. Krishna said, the wrestling takes place between the equals. You are like such a big person. We are just little boys. Let other boys come and we'll wrestle with them. So Chanush said, you are not little boys. Nobody knows who you are. Like, you consider what you have done just a little while ago, that shows that you are not just some little boys. You killed Kuvalaya Pira. Nobody could actually kill this elephant. It has the strength of 10,000 elephants. So anyway, consider that this is an opportunity to please the king. And if the king is pleased, he will give you rewards. So come fight. So they started to fight. And people also were shouting, that's unfair, that's unfair. How can these two little boys fight with these two giants? But Kamsa didn't pay any heed. Wrestling went on. And sometimes it seemed that these two little boys are in difficulty. Chanur and Mushti, with such powerful blow, they're hitting them. He's creating excitement. So first he is allowing the enemies to beat him, and then Krishna got hold of Chanur. And Balaram got hold of Mushti, lifted them up, and started to swing them overhead. And then smashed him on the ground. They got up again and hit Krishna on the chest. Nothing happened. It seemed like hitting of that seemed like somebody is throwing a lotus to an elephant. But then Krishna hit Chandra and he started to vomit blood. And this way, for a long time they fought. And then finally, Krishna picked him up overhead. This is Krishna's favorite way of killing the demons. One of the favorite ways. Kept on spinning him, smashed him on the ground. Chanura was dead. And Mushtik also was killed by Balaram. Then their three brothers, Kuta, Shal and Toshal, came and attacked. But they also got killed by Krishna and Balaram. So at that point, Kamsa actually stood up from his dais, from his throne in the elevated mansion, elevated seat. And he started to shout, throw them out of this city. Arrest all these coward people. kill Ugrasen, kill Vasudev. And when he was raving and ranting like that, Krishna from the arena jumped up onto that elevated manch, elevated stage. Kamsa already pulled out his sword and a shield. Although he attacked Krishna with weapons and Krishna was bare hand, just with one hand he just slapped Kamsa. Avoiding the attack of the sword, he just slapped Kamsa. And Kamsa's turban went flying. And Kamsa was trying to kill Krishna. But Krishna kept on, with Kamsa also Krishna played around for a while. And then finally he caught Kamsa by his hair. And he threw Kamsa from that elevated stage onto the wrestling arena. And then he jumped himself there. And he, sitting on Kamsa's chest, he kept on punching Kamsa. Kamsa was dead. And then Krishna caught Kamsa by his hair and started to move him around the arena. Just as a lion, after killing an elephant, moves around, dragging it around. And everybody was excited, started to sing the glory of Krishna. But Kamsa's 8 brothers came to attack. Krishna and Balaram killed all of them. And seeing all that, other kings all fled. They ran away, giving up the hope of winning half the kingdom. The bow has already broken, and now Kamsa is gone. So they felt that there is no hope. So this is how Krishna actually killed Kamsa. And then he went to the prison, released Ugrasen, Vasudev and Devaki. And Vasudev and Devaki were so overwhelmed to see their two sons. They embraced them and started to... They completely forgot who they were and started to behave with them just like father and mother, who had been united with their lost children after so many years. It's a very, very touching sight, the way Vasudev and Devaki greeted Krishna. And there, Krishna made Ugrasen the king of Mathura. And so this is how the killing of Kamsa is accomplished. But the story doesn't end here. We'll continue at 4:00. If anybody has a question, you can ask.
You said you will not have Shanti and Radhika to curse by someone to be sent from Krishna for one century.
Yeah. That was Sridhama, one of the covered boyfriends of Krishna. You see, Sridhama was guarding Krishna's chamber when Krishna was actually with Viraja, other gopi. And Sridhama was guarding the gate. So Radharani came, Sridhama stopped. So Radharani became so upset that she cursed him that he would become a demon. So that's how Sridhama actually became Sankachura demon. And Sridhama said that because without any fault of mine you cursed me, I curse you that for 100 years you'll become separated from Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So also comes the ultimate liberation. So are there any different kinds of liberation? What sort of liberation is what are the differences? What are the differences between Dhritarashtra's liberation and
Dhritarashtra's liberation? Or when Dhritarashtra actually left his body in the forest. In the forest fire, yeah.
He also attained liberation because he was not sure of the
And generally they get Sajujya Mukti, marching in the body of Krishna, effulgence of Krishna. Yes. Yeah, Shrikanta, you had a question? Yeah, okay. And then I'll take your question. Yes. Yeah, Ugrasen was the parent.
And mother?
Mother was actually Padmavati, Ugrasen's real wife, Ugrasen's wife. Whereas Kamsa was actually, you know, a son of a demon in the womb of Padmavati. Yes.
Whenever I read the scriptures, whenever I start to read the scriptures, I'm very enthusiastic, like the Krishna book or Bhagavatam. After reading a few verses, a few pages, my enthusiasm starts fading, and sometimes I get bored, or sometimes I sleep. So, what can I do to prevent such? I mean, such lack of enthusiasm. I want, like, because he is the person I'm relishing, and Lord Nectarine. Somehow, after some time,
well, as I said yesterday, you know, philosophy becomes difficult to understand or retain interest. But stories? Do you like to read stories?
I read Krishna book also, but
what happens when you read Krishna? Do you feel the same?
Okay.
Okay.
But in some chapters where it's like for the time, there's too much qualification of Krishna, I mean, it's very, very troublesome. After some time, it seems like the paragraphs are repeating, and so I think a lot of others, obviously, it's very nice.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So, when that happens, you know, if you feel that you're losing interest, then what you can do is, up to what extent you have read, try to contemplate on that, try to meditate on that, try to think about that. Right? And in glorification, if it is becoming kind of little too much to digest, then just again, contemplate on whatever you have read so far. So glorification, they're saying, like, Krishna, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are the Supreme Creator. You have killed so many demons. And so try to at least meditate on that, you know. Okay. Give him the mic.
Thank you for the lecture. I would like to one thing you said at the beginning. You talk about the chanting and the following the progress principles. And another thing is about standing the beautiful. I have been speaking it for quite a long time. I tried to be steady with my chanting and following the principles. And I get to a point that it's difficult to maintain. It's like, for example, climbing a mountain. When you are nearly at the top, it's really easy to come down because it's so difficult to reach the top of the mountain. So, once you are in that high level, how can you keep continuing until you get to the top? But that's easily go down.
Okay, if you're tired of climbing up, take some rest. Relax. And execute your devotional service happily. And never let it become too troublesome, too difficult.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Yes, Ananda.
Would you say same as German liberation? And the second question is, does one come back again to this material world after attaining certain?
Yeah. The question is whether Sajjaja Mukti is same as Brahman River liberation. Yes, Sajjaja Mukti is merging into Brahmajyoti. Right? And often from Sajjaja Mukti they come down. Like for example, Hiranyakashipu Hiranyaksha got Sajjaja Mukti. Right? And they stayed in that until Treta Yuga began. Then they came from that situation to become Ravana and Kumbhakarna. Then again they were killed and again went to sleep in Sajjaja Mukti. Again they woke up in Dwapar Yuga as Shishupal and Dantavakra. But Vaikuntha Mukti they don't come down. From Sajjaja Mukti they come down. Give me mic.
Yesterday you were talking about the fact that the words of a brahmana or a pure devotee become true, have to become true. And so I've heard, for example, some devotee maybe in a festival where he distributes prasada sweets, you know, maybe people come, they say, is it vegan? And he says, yeah, it's vegan. Or also, there is butter or milk products. And I said, but why did you tell that if it's not like that? He said, you know, they die the day after. It's just for the fact that they said they thought that they were vegan. They could not take this out. So, how to interpret it?
Yeah. Well, what I said yesterday is that the words of the brahmanas, the sages, are actually brahmanas, meaning they're situated in the mode of goodness. And because they're situated in the mode of goodness, whatever they say becomes true. Because they're situated in Brahman. Brahmana means one who is situated in the Brahman realized platform. So their words never go in vain. And their words never go in vain because they never lie. They always tell the truth. And because they always tell the truth, whatever comes out of their mouth is also become truth. Alright? And sometimes devotees lie. I don't know what to say. Like, maybe for the sake of preaching, one can take this poetic license. But it's better not to. What's the harm in saying that? No, this is not vegan, this is vegetarian. But you can take it just a little bit. Because they are not as staunch as we are. You see, we are very staunch, no meat eating. So even if there is a trace of, you know, egg in something, we don't take that. Even if there is a trace of enzyme, cow in it, you know, we don't take that. So we are very strict, but the vegans are not so strict. We can tell them, well, there's a little ghee is there, you know, like it's not milk. And my best is to explain and convince them, you know, take the easy way of lying. Give him the mic.
I need to know, actually, there is a Vasudeva is indication of Shuddha Shakta. But Vasudeva and Devaki, they worship three life drives to have Krishna as their son. So, we don't have to suit any suit, like as a Devaki, Jashoda and Nanda was doing, as a Krishna, I should serve as a Vasudeva, as my son. So, but Vasudeva and Devaki, they have only desires to have only their self. There is no intention to serve. So there is no service of episode. It is also pure goodness.
Well, yeah, it is pure goodness. Like, they wanted Krishna to appear. But at that time, their main focus was to just have Krishna as their son. They did not have any consideration at that time to render devotional service to him. You get the point? Like, because they did not desire to have, to render service to Krishna, they simply wanted to have Krishna as their son. That's why they got Krishna as their son, Vasudev, but didn't really get the opportunity to have a loving exchange with him, at least at that time. Later on they had. Okay, so I will, and now we have 5 minutes, we can have a little kid.